Hello, friend. I hope I can call you that. This is the real Errol Strider. The man you're about to hear on this program is a fake Errol Strider, which will become obvious the more you listen to him. But we indulge him, we understand him, and we recognize his need to be able to express himself thusly. As you may remember from our last episode, we found Errol Strider and his wife being dropped off at Lupin Lodge, a clothing optional resort in Northern California. And this is the place from which they are broadcasting the show that you are about to hear. Actually, it's more of a conversation. It's a conversation between two people who consider themselves idiot savants. And it will be up to you, listener, to determine whether you're getting the savant part of their expression or the idiot part. With that being said, have a go.
It's January 17th, 2017. Whoa. And this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you from the Santa Cruz Mountains, specifically from Lupin Lodge.
Where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I love it when you say that.
That's why I say it.
And even more how you say it. I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We want you to know that we invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities. And, of course, what to make of it. Sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many surprising voices of Errol Strider.
Our show is sponsored by our good friend Jeremy Bede, who's down in Wiley, Texas. Jeremy's an artist and a fellow spiritual sojourner. And Go Raw. And Go Raw makes the most delicious, natural, raw, of course, healthy, nutritious product.
Go to goraw.com to find out where you can find Go Raw in your neighborhood. Like maybe you have a Whole Foods. Maybe you have a Safeway, a Costco. So find out where you can get whole, delicious, go raw food.
Let me say this. I know you got a lot on your plate. Let's face it. Life is demanding, and you're busy. Nothing personal, but thanks for considering carving out some time to listen to our show tonight. That is just super. Like I said, nothing personal. If you hadn't been listening in, you'd have missed out on this great conversation because our featured phrase of this week is, you guessed it, nothing personal. When confronted by personal attack, for instance, we often are tempted to take it personally. But who is that person who's taking it personally anyway? Is that person you? Or a pigment of your imagination.
A pigment?
Did I say that?
Yeah, I think that's funny.
Tonight we're going to delve into that most important issue of our lives. Our person. Who is it really, and how personally should we take any of it? If you ever ask the question, who am I really? Or if you find you're taking life way too seriously, well, expect to get some relief from tonight's conversation.
Taking the phrase nothing personal, we say nothing personal, even though it's always personal. It comes from our person to another person. Maybe it's an apology for being personal. What a shame. Can we embrace our personalness with all its ragged edges of judgments? Ah, oh my, if we could, then maybe we could say fully, unapologetically, it is personal. Yeah.
It's usually personal, which is why I came up with the phrase, if all else fails, take it personally, several years ago. We did a show called If All Else Fails, Take It Personally. And all I remember is the refrain went something like, if all else fails, take it personally. Personally is what you gotta do. Bum, bum, bum. Or something like that. I'll spare you any more attempts at me singing.
You know, you're born with this great voice. As people like Adele opens her mouth and this great voice comes out. All the beautiful singers that we love. But I open my voice and say the same words she does. It doesn't sound anything like Adele. I take it personally.
Kermit the Frog, that's what comes to mind when I hear you sing. Do you remember Kermit?
I absolutely do. I love Kermit.
We're looking at this whole thing about taking it personally. One of the things I want to mention tonight is I've been listening to some Jacob Needleman talks and interviews. For those of you who don't know Jacob Needleman, he's a philosopher, a teacher at San Francisco State, has written many books probing into the mystery the way we do. So I've really appreciated him over the years. I had a chance to talk to him briefly, and I hope I'll have a chance to do it again. But he just shared a couple things that I thought are worth looking at tonight, especially in terms of taking it personal. One of the things he shared was a story. He had asked some members of his class to do an exercise, to look at themselves when they get annoyed, and then be able to stop and objectify that. Who is that that's getting annoyed? To step aside from it. And all the students agreed to do that. And then they all came back the next class, and he asked them, okay, how many of you, they had about 50 students, how many of you did the exercise? And he said, 1.5 raised their hands.
Who was the half?
This girl who was tentative, hesitant to do it. She shared that she did the exercise, and she was amazed to discover that there was another presence, another person inside herself besides the one who was just being annoyed. It was like a new finding. The others, having all forgot, didn't get the benefit of that insight. It reinforced to me something that we talk about a lot, which is the witness. Who's the witness? Being able to develop that capacity to be a witness to yourself. When you do that, you are the experiencer of the person having the experience. And that's a significant step closer to, well, Source, God. God is the experiencer of our experience. Indeed, that's the great gift. We can give an otherwise full-up, infinite universe supplier. And that is the uniqueness of our experience. But as I understand, that experience needs to be aligned with the movement toward wholeness, the discovery and activation of wholeness, which incidentally is a definition of will by none other than Yeshua ben Joseph, a.k.a. Jesus the Christ. That will is the activation of wholeness. So wherever that's happening, you've got some wholeness being activated.
Yes, good enough for me. In fact, I was talking to someone today who was interested in not getting so hot-headed or annoyed. And I said, it's very important to be mindful of oneself. You know, just look at yourself dispassionately and see what's going on, which is just what he's talking about. Then you make an adjustment. The way great athletes do, the way great performers do. You hear a scratchy note, and you can't sit there and beat yourself up. You don't have time. You're in the middle of a performance. You just adjust. You make an adjustment quickly and move it to the good note or the right speed or the right whatever, whatever it is you're doing. But if it takes a long time to do that, don't worry about it, because the next time maybe it'll take less time. The next time it takes less time until you are there at the moment that it's happening, and then the change happens spontaneously.
Bada bing, bada boom.
It's not personal, except that it's very personal.
Here's something that Jacob Needleman shared in his talk. He says, emotions are the most dangerous things on the planet. I could see that from the point of view that it's our frantic, out-of-control emotional life that causes much of the problems in our relationship to each other, and then those problems can become toxic, cruel, hostile, and painful, and harmful. And boy, it seems to me, if what he says is true, that if we could harness those emotions, we'd do a lot better at getting along with each other.
There are negative emotions and there's positive emotions. I was listening to something today that was so dear about a man whose son died of AIDS, and he was a Rotarian, I guess. And he realized that there was all these people dying of AIDS who had no help, no support. They didn't have families because the families were ashamed of them, didn't come to them. And he just began, I guess, a movement, asking the Rotary people to step up and be the support for these people. And at first, people didn't want to, because this was long before it became okay to have AIDS kind of thing. But he persisted, and as a result, every Rotary club in the world is engaged in that now. And this man is in his 80s now, and he was just honored. People said how much it meant to them. It was really the gist of it. The story is very beautiful, but I found myself crying in the car. It touched me so deeply that someone cared so much that they went out and did something and made a difference. Of course, there are millions of people like that, but this story touched me, and I realized that's what we're being called to do. But he had an emotional response that he turned into right action.
That's excellent, to be able to harness that emotion in that way, and mm-hmm. then to be able to harness them in other ways, especially when they're negative emotion, which I would call not the right use of will, which is not activating wholeness. It's actually used to exacerbate separateness and separation, which fundamentally is the source of the whole problem that we are facing in our culture and in our relationships. Incidentally, I've been also listening to these economists. I heard a panel of economists today. That was fascinating.
Sometimes it's fascinating. Sometimes they use language that just is so out of my ken that I don't know what they're talking about.
Well, it had something to do with dollars and cents and politics. I can pretty well safely say
cents
that.
Like C-E-N-T-S or S-E-N-S-E.
Okay, yeah, that works. Nothing personal, but they're both good. One of the things they talk about is, as I read in so many of these books, that we need to do this, and if this happens, it's going to be good. This happens. And as far as they get to why it doesn't happen, and they do acknowledge if we only had the what they call political will. The political will, meaning that those who are in charge of the country and the government and the funding and all of that are actively willing those things to come about. Kind of like the New Deal was the political will of that time. But I was thinking that before we get to the political will, it's the moral will that really has to be activated, or the ethical will. And even before that, as the Arantxa book says, you have to come to that place of spiritual advantage where you have truly fallen in love with spiritual values and realities in order to overcome the inertia and the temptations of unbridled emotions and derailed will, if you will.
I think that emotions are like an engine. They can propel you into places, but you do have to know where you're going. If you just have an engine that's taking you somewhere and you don't know where you're going, it's a meaningless thing. It will run out of gas pretty quickly if you just run around in circles. But it can be an engine to move you into very positive and wonderful places. For me, it always comes down to what's running it. Is that engine being run on love emotions, emotions that propel you into a love actions, or is it propelling you into fear actions? If we don't see the difference, we can get confused and just go around in circles, which we seem to do very well.
But it's nothing personal.
Nothing personal.
Okay, just going to keep that straight.
I'm going to call a dizzy dame is someone who just goes around in circles, I guess.
Another quick story, and then I want to play a little music. is from Jacob Needleman. He said he had a chance to speak to high school students, and each grade he had to go into and talk to all of them about whatever he's talking about. One of the things that he was focusing on was emotions. And one of the freshmen asked the question, why do we get angry? That was a great question.
What was his answer?
I don't think he had a definitive answer. The answer that comes up for me is frustration. We've talked about this. There's the natural fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
And A Course in Miracles says getting angry is having an expectation of someone to play a role that you have given them. Based upon the fear, and the anger is the tension that erupts when the fear meets the out-of-controlness. Yeah.
Usually you see pictures of gorillas banging their chests and making very heavy sounds, which sounds like anger to us. And I think it's a defense mechanism, you know, for sure.
When I did it yesterday at about 3 in the afternoon, I could feel that defensiveness coming up in me as I was pounding my chest. You didn't see it, but I allowed the gorilla out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, he was beating his chest.
What were you angry about?
I was angry because I discovered that I was probably incapable of being and doing the things that I should and shouldn't be or do. Then I started thinking about that, and I thought, way too personal.
Oh, I'm so glad.
With that being said, let's listen to the Songs of Aaron and see if you can figure out what this title is.
The second that I lost you out of sight, no matter how I tried, I see you fade before me. I'm rolling on a wave right off the shore. No matter where I go, these lightning bolts, they could save me. Traveling man I used to be before, I'm walking on my own. These times of change, they can take me. I know it's nothing personal at all, just numbers in our row above it all. Do you see me? And no heart ain't made of stone. You believe me or you don't. Will you catch me if I fall? I just wanted to let you know that you amaze me. Rolling up those sleeves to take these burdens off the road, and you've changed me more than you'll ever. There's always someone else out in the cold. You find them when you don't expect it. Oh, it's crazy. A mystery, a story to be told. We're strangers on our own, we'll find a way. Yeah, you know me. And no heart ain't without soul. You believe me or you don't. Will you catch me if I fall? I just wanted to let you know that you amaze me. Rolling up those sleeves to take these burdens as we go. And you've changed me more than you'll ever.
Nothing Personal, Songs of Erin. You've changed me more than you'll ever know.
Nothing Personal?
He said it, not a lot.
Oh, you've changed me more than you'll ever know.
It's a good thing to have done. Would you not say, Rabbi?
Yeah, I'd say that's a good thing, and that you can leave someone in your wake. The wake, like when you are wake, you're going like a ship and it leaves a wake. Of course, not everyone is awake. Some people are asleep, but the ship doesn't leave asleep. It only leaves awake. Nothing personal, but that's just the way it is. So okay. I'm leaving something in your wake, like you've changed me in ways you didn't know. Like, how could that be? When I think about that, the people who have changed me, that one thing, you know, they all had in common. Hey, they took a notice of me in some way, but not all of them. Some of them were doing other things. It was by example they changed me, and I really wouldn't know that because they were doing something that was personal to them. It wasn't nothing personal for me. I still got a good lesson out of it.
Then it was personal for you.
It became personal. It didn't start right. off personal. It started off impersonal. And when it got up on its feet and started to walk, and by the time I got around the corner where I was standing and waiting by the bushes and watching the little boy cut the trees off with his cutter thingy, it got personal.
And what you said is really weird, but that's okay. Don't take it personally.
Ah, weird. It wouldn't be the first time I've been called weird, but it's okay because I know it's nothing personal. Because I know that there is a part of me that is immune to being insulted. Never gets insulted.
That's the fun thing, isn't it? When we get to that place where we don't take it personally, because if someone wants to insult us, if someone wants to badger us, become very aware that their thing has nothing to do with us. We happen to be there at that time, and they're just going on. It's so easy to take it personally, but it's not personal. In that sense, it's not personal.
Actually, he did a talk at Google. I was listening to Jacob Needleman, and one of the people in the audience asked him, we kind of know what the agenda is, what the emotional side of ourself wants, but what does this other self want? His answer was something like just being present. That's what I got out of it. When I ask the question, what is that omnipotent self that is replete could possibly want?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It has it all.
And so he left the wanting to us. And I said, go, want, and see what happens. In fact, the phrase desire is from the Latin of the father, or of the sire. So it's implanted in us. But what does Thomas Merton say about desires? Remember that? To spiritualize your life.
Right, spiritualize your desires.
As I was listening to these guys, and the economist and Dr. Needleman, and this whole thing about awakening the will to be moral. I have to say this. I was sharing with my friend Jerry, who used to be our neighbor. I sent him a note about the essay I had written, Uncommon Sense. And I was wanting to get feedback if it seemed too ideal.
Istic.
Idealistic. Yeah, you have to add that istic. It's not personal, but it does require. He says, I think the state of the world has always been bad. Personally, I think we've passed the point of no return. But he says, without a doubt, we are entering on perilous times. Oh, and then he says, I think that idealism is basically the domain of the comfortable. The Syrian refugee cannot afford idealism, nor can even my out-of-work nephew, an oil engineer, who hopes that Trump will bring the jobs back so he doesn't lose his house. There's the conundrum. If you're comfortable, how motivated are you to make the kind of serious changes that need to happen to awaken that moral will? And if you're so caught up in just getting fed at whatever level that is for you, as he pointed out, you're too consumed with the immediate to be able to entertain, let alone implement, the kind of change that needs to happen.
There are exceptions to that, very much so. You know, I think that there are many people whose idealism was so great that even in the most dire circumstances, their idealism, which is a sense of hope that things will get better, never went away. And then you think of people like Nelson Mandela, who was in prison for 26 years and out of it became this forgiving man who forgave his persecutors and everything else as a result of being in this, what some people would think would be better to lose your house than be in prison for 26 years. I don't know if it's something planted in certain people. Maybe it's an evolutionary thing. Maybe it's some people are just born with more awareness or more, I don't know. But I know that they try to prove that environment will cause people to be mean. But out of all that environment that is not good, a saint can come. Does that saint have implanted in them this sense of idealism and hope and spiritual desire that the other person living in the same house with them doesn't have?
This is Barney here, and I think that's a great question. You know, does it come out of just the environment? Because I know some guys from the neighborhood that some of them turn out to be, you know, gangsters, and other guys turn out to, one guy turned out to be a judge. And not just a judge, but a fair judge, which to me is really something.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there they are coming out. And so the question is, what does it take? Well, I think one of the things you might consider doing in your efforts to apply yourselves to this issue is to get a hold of all those people who have expressed some level of growth where they are able to hold the compassionate, caring pose and have the witness inside them that you talked about, being able to kind of monitor them and keep them steady on the path that the part of them that has no desire has determined is still the intention. You know, nothing personal, you understand. It's just the
I understand.
Yeah, you just have to go down that path here and find those who can resonate with that. So it's really about, I love that notion of resonance. You play a note and something goes, another note goes, whoa, and it's like it's right in the same key. So that's the secret here. I learned that. Find people in the same key you are. And if they're singing D flat and you're in the key of C, might have some problems, but it's nothing personal.
Cacophonous. But I was just thinking, you know, like this sense of idealism or sense of taking ideals and moving things into action. Is it just like talent? You know, is it like you're born with a talent? Like you're born with the talent to sing, because we started off that way, you know, talking about that.
Right,
or not. Is that sense, or maybe the hunger for something more than just the material, is it like a talent, that hunger? Some people are born with it and some people aren't at this point in time. Will we all come back as great singers? Will we all come back as inspirational, hopeful, action-oriented positivity beings?
I think it's a talent.
Yeah.
Because I heard the phrase I read in the Arantia book where it refers to Jesus as a religious genius.
Mm.
And that's not a common way of understanding that. A genius is someone who has a talent that's just really big, I guess.
Yeah.
To say someone's a genius implies that there's this gift there of...
A gift. I love that. That genius is a gift. It's a gift. You don't learn it out of a book. It's a gift.
Speaking of gift, this was many years ago when we were living in Boulder, and I had, in a restaurant, I was talking with someone, and I was able to share a perspective that really changed them and mm-hmm. helped them and assisted them. I remember driving home, and I was thinking, wow, how should I regard that? They really got help, and I was the one who did it. How do you deal with that? The ego wanted to get into that. And I heard this voice, that present voice said, you were both gifted. That's all. You were both given the gift.
Gift to give and the gift to receive.
Yeah. Gratitude. Thank you for the gift. I would say that gratitude, this is nothing personal. But gratitude is a great default response to what's showing up in your life.
You can practice gratitude. You can practice it until it becomes second nature. I remember when the boys were little and I said to them, there's two words that you should learn because they'll always make people feel good when you're with them. And they are thank you. When they were little, they'd go to people's houses for birthday parties and they'd leave and they'd say thank you to the hostess or host. And people would say, your children are so nice. Well, nice or not, they said thank you. And that meant that they were nice.
One of the things that most of us want is to be appreciated, to be met, to be acknowledged, to be understood, to be accepted.
Seen and heard.
Seen and heard. And yet, because we are so insecure in ourselves, and as Dr. Needleman, Jerry, as his friends call him, pointed out, is that we have to first become compassionate with ourselves in order to be compassionate beyond ourselves. So many people really don't like themselves. One starting place can be the place where you realize that you don't like yourself.
Nothing personal, of course.
This is a song by Grönland.
Grönland?
Given the wishful thinking, I might be the one to place all my eggs in the one basket, but it still feels like my best bet. You've gotten so good at being right from the start. I wish I could be fooled by colors we choose to use, the drawn sapphic contours.
Grönland is the artist, spelled Groenland. She's quite a poet. These are her lyrics. It really is an interesting poem, and you don't always hear the lyrics in the song itself. She says, I take back what I said. I'm not ready to give in to wishful thinking. I might be the one to place all my eggs into one basket, but it still feels like my best bet. You've gotten so good at being right from the start. I wish I could be fooled by colors we choose to use to draw inside thick contours. Today feels different, an all new kind of effort. What happens with flat words now that we've entered a space where intent comes first? I know your words are beautiful, but I don't need to hear them now. Sounds flowing down in waterfalls. This is just for show. This is just a bluff. This is nothing personal. Let the tension grow till I'm brave enough to trust those words will bring me back somehow.
Wow, that's neat. Yeah. Does she call it peace, nothing personal?
Yeah. Yeah, and she ends her last paragraph before the chorus is, let's start with the things we know. Oh, we've been here before. Drink it hot, drink it cold. There's so much you can't control. Maybe there's nothing to it. There's nothing personal. That's that impersonal self. I remember reading these books many years ago. The book was called The Impersonal Self. It's about this self that's really beyond ego. The big difference is that the ego self is a self that knows and defines and delineates and attempts to value itself by virtue of where it's something other than the other, something over here and all that's over there, and it distinguishes itself in both senses of that word distinguished. Because distinguished? Oh, good, yes, this is Professor Umbridge. Now you're talking my language. Distinguished, because I knew several distinguished scholars who didn't distinguish themselves very much in terms of what they had to offer. So it became somewhat questionable how distinguished they actually were, if they weren't very actually distinctive. So that got us to thinking about the difference between being distinctive and distinguished. And to the degree that there's this personal impersonal self that's in there not needing that and is able to just ride into the next moment on the way, shall we say, ride into the next moment on the wave of infinite agreement, shall we call it.
Infinite agreement, I like that. Talk about resonance, resonating with the infinite. Agreement is about resonance.
Thank you, Professor. I would concurred. I was so glad to hear them say on this films I'm watching on money, you know, one guy said it, that I've been thinking this for years. Money is just an agreement. The place where we change the money system is to come to a different agreement about it. The whole idea of scarcity was planted into the system so to get some people more than others. There really is no scarcity, and that's what we have to come to grips with. Would you say come to grips, Professor Schnitzel?
I wouldn't say coming to grips. When you grip something, you give it a firm grip or you give it a lame grip. But either way, it's not very far from gripping to griping. So you have to be careful that you don't take the grip or to make the grip go into gripe, because then you're really hearing all these gripes from people when they would not be able to say anything other than personal. And so you won't even be able to kick in the phrase nothing personal, because they will have been all personal. So there's nothing personal, has no place to fit in, except maybe where the button broke, the personal coat that they're wearing.
Professor.
Nothing personal.
Oh, my God. You're getting as silly as Errol. In truth.
Well, I'm not sure if I should take that on a compliment or a criticism.
No, Errol, neither.
Errol, why would you take it? Well, it depends on who's taking it. Is the personal I, that's the self that's just looking all of it and going,
Nothing personal,
nothing
of
personal.
Course.
Or should the self that's going, I need to be seen and recognized in a particularly important way.
Somebody talked about I've lost my ego and I've lost this and I've lost that. And yet all I could experience from that person at that moment was ego. And I thought, if you think you lost your ego, that's pretty egotistical. I'm very aware that the ego is much smarter than that.
Well, it's dependable.
It's dependable.
It's always there.
The thing is to constantly give it a big fat kiss and, you know, watch it melt.
There you go. I wanted to share something I put on Facebook today, speaking of ego.
Nothing personal, of course.
No. Once again, we're being distracted from the crucial issues of our times by the powers that we wish we weren't, as in the powers that be. While the media keeps our attention on the trivia of Donald's tweets and people's responses thereto, the crises of our civilization, economic, environment, democratic, etc., are taking not just a backseat, but are sitting on the side of the road with their thumbs up. We, who are being distracted, on the other hand, have our thumbs up our fill-in-the-blank.
Butsky.
It really is amazing that we give such trivia, such stuff of such inconsequence, all this attention, when in the meantime, there's all this serious stuff coming. I know we should laugh at it, and I love satire. I'll be the first to laugh at it, especially my role in it, because that's really ridiculous, although it's nothing personal, but it's still ridiculous.
Your ridiculousness is personal.
Well, it's hard not to be that way.
I totally agree with you.
Which thing?
That it's all a distraction. Put a fool into the world, and you're distracted from the world. You just see the fool. And yet, the antics of the fool usually hide a deviousness. Not a deviousness, and that's not always fair, but hide something behind it. It's like a subterfuge. It's like a screen so that you don't see what's going on. You just become distracted by the foolishness. That is the distraction itself. One must be aware, I think more than anything, is be aware. When we become very judgmental, it clouds our awareness because we make a decision. We make a judgment, and then we adhere to that judgment, and we want to feed that judgment. The moment has passed, and now you are distracted by your own judgments. So to stay non-judgmental and be aware of what is taking place, neither good nor bad, but you can see a place where you can stick your hand in the dike.
That also helped me understand anger. It creates a tension because you have these judgments which you keep wanting to move into the future as they're going back into the past.
You can get lost that way.
Well, you can get really stretched and bent out of shape, and that would make me angry.
There's nothing personal, of course.
Nothing personal to that. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. I'm Errol Strider with
and
my
I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider.
Alicia Strider.
Hello there, Errol Strider.
Anyway, we're sponsored by Go Raw and Jeremy Bede, we've known since 40 years ago or thereabouts.
More looking than that, because we know each other 42 years and you knew him before me.
Okay. Thank you.
Nothing personal.
Okay. All right. I can go with that. Another singer that I just wanted to share with you, because she's got a song called Nothing Personal. She's a lovely singer. And let's see if we can understand what she has to say. This is Nita Sananga.
the rhythm. Oh,
it's a rumba.
That's really nice.
Did you know that my mom and dad won a rumba contest in Miami Beach, Florida?
No, I did not know that. Imagine the little secrets that come out after many years. I won a mambo contest.
Did you? I won the jitterbug contest in seventh grade.
I was in my 20s.
Oh, we got some credits. You know, we should put these credits down on our resume.
Especially our parents.
Right.
Rumba contest. I love the rumba.
I got to tell you this story that Jacob Needleman shared. It's so beautiful. This father, they were celebrating, I guess, Christmas or something and getting gifts. And he was with his son, I don't know, 5-6-year-old little boy, and they're opening gifts. And then comes to the door a little boy about his age, who's a beggar, though. And father comes into his boy and says, go give him a gift. And so the little boy got not very good toy to give him. The father says, no, give him your favorite toy, the one you just got. Of course, this little kid did not want to give up his favorite toy. But the father held his ground, and he told the boy to go do it. He stayed in the room, though, the father. He didn't go with him. And then just a little while, the little boy runs back with a big smile on his face, and he says to his father, can we do it again?
Oh, how sweet.
I knew a guy who was doing a lot of research on how the military-industrial complex used the media in subtle, clever ways that we don't even talk about to influence us. One of the things he emphasized, and a lot of this stuff emphasizes, is they want to use the media to squash out those impulses to good, to keep us as consumers. But these video games, it's all about battles and everything. It does put the heart away a little bit.
But let me tell you something. Uh-oh. I do believe that these companies and everything else, they don't make you be what it is. They're interested in what you're interested in. Once they grab hold of what you will resonate with, they sell it. Because when I lived in Israel, I was told when they started the State of Israel, they had a newspaper called Good Times, and it failed. It wasn't dramatic enough, exciting enough, whatever. I don't know. It failed. Where are people? Where do they go to the movies? There's a whole bunch of movies out there that are good movies, feel good movies. They don't get as much attendance as the shoot 'em up, bing, bing, bang, bang movies. Is this mentality influencing people, or are people influencing that mentality?
I'd say both ends. It's a two-way street.
Really? A two-way street?
Yeah, but you have to look both ways. Nothing personal. Am I right, Father? Oh, sure enough there. This is Father O'Malley. When you hit the two-way street there, if you only look one way, well, that's probably the last way you'll be looking. So we encourage our little youngins to look both ways, especially when they come across something that they want to have a strong opinion about and hurt somebody in order to make their opinion be the dominant one. We want them to look both ways. Instead of looking just that way, look at the way of seeing what's causing him to do the things that he's doing that I'm not very happy about. And then it starts to grow between us. And that's a wonderful currency of life. And that's understanding. And so the more we can understand, I'd like to see that as the actual currency. If money represented understanding, and we have passed money amongst us, why, then you'd see quite a bit of different world.
Father, you were given the gift of idealism.
Nothing personal. Oh, sure, someone has to carry the gift. And like your friend Jerry there, he said that how the gift of idealism is just for the comfortable. Well, once in a while, some of us are uncomfortable, can squirt right up into that idealism and live it and allow it to be part of who we are and allow it to motivate us to do the best we can in regard to the rest of it.
And I know there's a lot of people who are really, in anybody else's eyes, very comfortable and don't have idealism. They're cynical and jaded. But in terms of comfort, they don't work. They don't really have to work. They have incomes and everything else that keep coming in, whether they are physically out there in the world or not. They have roofs. They have sanitation. They have all the comforts that a lot of people on the planet would really like a lot. They're very jaded, and they're not idealistic at all. They're comfortable, but they're not emotionally comfortable.
Not emotionally comfortable. I want to tie it up with something Jacob Needleman said. It's the state of consciousness that's the problem. That's probably so. What are we focused on? It's a collusion between the mercantile interest in all the aspects, the media and this and that and the other, to keep generating this dissatisfaction and creating this desire in us for things that we don't really want and certainly don't need. But it keeps it going because it's driven by this phenomenon, which is greed. But you got to do some deconstruction of the concept of greed. What's going on there? Well, I keep grasping for more of that which I already have lots of, but I keep wanting more. And I think underneath all this, there's the, if I just keep getting, if I get what I want, then I will be who I am. I'll be fully me. Since none of that ever gets you there, speaking of person, then you're compelled to just get more. Because for a moment, when you make that sale or eat that bite or dominate that situation, there is a moment of, ooh, that feels good. So it sets us in motion to wanting to repeat that over and over.
This week is Martin Luther King Jr. birthday week. The holiday happened on Monday. We talked about slavery as people are enslaved. They didn't want to be put in those ships. It's involuntary. It's not a voluntary slavism.
Slavery usually isn't voluntary.
Except economic slavery.
Ah.
I remember saying to someone, we are slaves to consumerism. And she said, ah, yes, but happy slaves. So there is voluntary. It's like, oh, the gifts that you get, the seeming gifts, the seeming rewards or perks, make that slavery enjoyable.
There you have it. You've got some enjoyable slavery ahead of you, folks, because it's going to get worse and worse until we have a change of will, have the will for it. Until we harness our will toward the true, the beautiful, and the good, and what will help get that will resuscitated in moving in that direction is a big wallop of faith. And the good news is, faith is something you can ask for, especially if you think you don't have it. There you have it. But speaking of not having it, we're about not to have any more of this radio show. This has been so good. I want to again thank...
We're not going to have the radio show anymore tonight. Yeah.
It's nothing personal. You all understand. It's just we got to bring it to a closing. It's just been wonderful being with you, Rochelle, and your alter ego, and your alter ego of your alter ego. All three of them, I thought.
And all your egos. Yeah. I love having them with me tonight,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we want to include our egos. You know, they get very pissed off when they're left out. And that's why we have to remember...
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Nothing personal.